This is an iHeart podcast.
You want smart political talk without the meltdowns? We got you.
And I'm Carol Markowitz.
And I'm Mary Catherine Hamm. We've been around the block in media, and we're doing things differently.
Normally is about real conversations. Thoughtful, try to be funny, grounded, and no panic.
We'll keep you informed and entertained without ruining your day.
Join us every Tuesday and Thursday.
Normally, on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
What is the system? We talk about it all the time. What is it? How does it work? Let's dig into that. Let's also dig into these street protests, culture war stuff. Man, what a show tonight on I'm Right. The system. You've heard me use that term 1,000 times. Maybe you've even found yourself using it now. The system, describing our corrupt, not just government, the corrupt institutions we have in this country. How they've all been occupied and taken over by dirty, vile communists, and they're all working together against you at all times. But that's honestly, it's vague, isn't it? So how about some specific examples? How does that even work? How does the system work? Well, I want to give a lot of credit to Jim Jordan, who will be joining us tomorrow, obviously the big cheese on the House Judiciary Committee. I have to give credit to him because he's the one breaking all this. Thank you, Jim, for laying it all out exactly how the system operates. You want to know how? Well, here's how it works. You see, leading up to the 2020 election, not after, leading up to the 2020 election, the system decided they wanted a lot of this anti-Democrat talk to quiet down. And they wanted Republicans to shut up and go away. And so that was the mission. Okay, so how do you accomplish that? Well, here's how they accomplished it. The State Department worked hand in hand with CISA, who worked hand in hand with the Department of Homeland Security, who worked hand in hand with America's university system, okay, a completely different part of the system, who worked hand in hand with America's social media companies, another totally, quote, separate part of the system. They all joined together to make sure you and your political opinions against Democrats and pro-free speech and maybe even pro-Trump or something like that, to make sure you were silenced and censored. What was it called? Oh, this is the best part. It was called the Election Integrity Partnership. Isn't that so beautiful? That is so how it works, too. The worst things the system does always have the nicest sounding names. After all, who wouldn't want election integrity? We need an Election Integrity Partnership. So how would it work? Well, here's how it worked. The federal government, they would identify speech they didn't like. Now, pause for a second. What speech? And whose speech? Well, the kind of speech they censored were jokes. Joe Biden's got dementia. Jokes, or just flat out facts that they wanted to keep hidden. Okay, so they identified that from people you would know. People who've appeared a million times on this show, from Jack Posobiec to Tracy Beans to all these people, they were identified. Harmeet Dillon, Sean Davis, identified as people who spread around these jokes. Okay, so the federal government identified the people, they identified the jokes or opinions they didn't like, and now they want those opinions censored. But it seems a little ham-fisted, doesn't it, to just go right to the social media companies if you're the federal government and say, hey, take down that post. You need to legitimize your censorship. So what did they do? They got with America's universities, America's elite universities like Stanford, who will, of course, in a very nonpartisan fashion, come up with a great system to make sure this is all done in a very intellectual way. And so they work with Stanford, who, of course, will come up and say, oh my gosh, this is damaging information. It should be censored. Then the federal government, in conjunction with the universities, walks into, let's say, Facebook and says, hey, I talked to Stanford. Look at this. I talked to my friends at Stanford. That speech, that post right there, whoo, that should be deleted. And the person who said it, maybe suspend their account, even delete their account. That's how the system works. Now, in case you think Jesse's being an over-the-top conspiracy theorist, I have great news for you. You actually don't have to take my word for it at all. In fact, I don't want you to. I want you to listen to FBI Special Agent Elvis Chan bragging about it.
We talked with all of these entities I mentioned regularly, at least on a monthly basis, and right before the election, probably on a weekly basis, right? If they were seeing anything unusual, if we were seeing anything unusual, sharing intelligence with technology companies, with social media companies, so that they could protect their own platforms, right?
Bragging about it. Of course, sounds great, right? Protect your platform, election integrity, of course. Of course, this special agent is not rotting in a federal prison where he belongs for the rest of his life. He's scot-free, making a boatload of money in the system. This is the guy who lied, of course, in his deposition about Hunter Biden and his laptop.
Are you aware of any communications between anyone at Facebook and anyone at the FBI related to the Hunter Biden laptop story?
No.
How about any other social media platform?
No.
How about Apple or Microsoft?
No.
Now, maybe you're sitting there saying, Jesse, my gosh, who is this evil agent of the government? Why didn't I know about him earlier? Well, if you're going to forgive me for this, I'm not trying to be insulting. The reason you didn't know about him earlier is you just started watching I'm Right. Longtime viewers have known about Elvis Chan for quite some time. I believe everything that comes out of the DOJ, FBI, everywhere, I believe all of it is a lie. I think I'm being lied to at all times. And if you would like to earn back my trust so I believe you ever again about anything, you will arrest that human being. You will put him through a public trial for violating the civil rights of Americans, for violating, abusing his post at the Federal Bureau of Investigation. And as soon as the cell door closes on Elvis Chan, as he begins his 30-year prison sentence in Fort Leavenworth, then you will start to earn back a little bit of my trust. But you see, not one elected Republican in the United States of America that I'm aware of has even suggested arresting this man. Now, I said all that to say this. I just want to finish up on this because we have a huge show I don't have all day. I said all that to say, do you think that they've stopped all these evil people running things? Do you think, as we are finding out everything they did, do you think that was all in the past? Or do you think it's all still happening right now? Something to think about, right? All that may have made you uncomfortable, but I am right. Speaking of FBI special agents, we have one of the brave whistleblowers here to describe exactly how this organization operates, and he will join us in just a moment. Before he does, let's do something good before we wade into more of this filth. Let's save a couple dogs, huh? How do you do that, right? Well, I saw a video last night of someone caught it on video. He was filming it from his apartment. A van on a busy highway pulls off to the side of the highway. Busy highway, cars zooming by, and just takes this adorable little puppy, throws him out the door. Van takes off. Puppy goes chasing after the owner who just left him. Is that not the worst freaking thing you've ever heard in your life? Delta Rescue, they take these dogs that have been abandoned and left for nothing, and they care for them for the rest of their lives. It's the world's largest no-kill, care-for-life animal shelter in the world. And they do what they do with your help. If you want to help them do that, go to deltarescue.org and help. All right? All right. We'll be back.
Hey there, I'm Mary Catherine Hamm.
And I'm Carol Markowitz. We've been in political media for a long time.
Long enough to know that it's gotten, well, a little insane.
That's why we started Normally, a podcast for people who are over the hysteria and just want clarity.
We talk about the issues that actually matter to the country without panic, without yelling, and with a healthy dose of humor.
We don't take ourselves too seriously, but we do take the truth seriously.
So if you're into common sense, sanity, and some occasional sass,
you're our kind of people.
Catch new episodes of Normally every Tuesday and Thursday
on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen.
Top of the homegrown violent extremist and domestic violent extremist threat, we also cannot and do not discount the possibility that Hamas or another foreign terrorist organization may exploit the current conflict to conduct attacks here on our own soil.
On top of the homegrown violent extremist and domestic violent extremist threat, on top of the homegrown violent extremist and domestic violent extremist threat,
very revealing little bit of testimony, wasn't it? That's why we talked about it so much at the time. Director of the FBI has asked specifically about Hamas, jihadi terror, the border, what are the threats? And immediately, he combines domestic terrorism. But who are these domestic terrorists? You remember the display that got leaked out there? People flying that dangerous Gadsden flag, come and take it flags, you know, little things like that. Joining me now, in my opinion, one of the heroes of this country, even though he'd never call himself that, FBI whistleblower, former FBI special agent, my friend Stephen Friend joins us. Okay, Steve, who exactly are these domestic violent extremists the FBI is looking for, and what are they doing when they say they're looking for them?
Well, thanks for having me, Jesse. Here's the thing that the FBI loves to do. They love to issue the caveat that the FBI does not investigate First Amendment protected activity. That is utter, complete hogwash. The FBI loves to look for groups of individuals or even individuals themselves who are doing nothing illegal, nothing improper, that they have decided to not follow along with a new secular state religion that we're all required to uphold, where we worship at the altar of the government and we accept premises such as people in white lab coats know the science and we have to follow it, or transgender madness. And the FBI will open investigations. And here's the thing. The warfare that is going on against in the American people in this case, all tools are at their disposal. They will go after them. They will reinterpret laws and charge them with crimes, or they will label them. Take somebody like a Mike Glover, an American contingency, who's encouraging people to be self-reliant, obviously departing from the idea that you have to worship at the altar of the government. And the FBI likes to label that individual a militia violent extremist, with a low probability of violence, zero being the lowest possible number, but it's still low. And now the FBI has an open investigation, an open intelligence investigation, where they can continue to gain information. They have now found the man, and they're going to look for the crime.
Okay, now explain what that means when they now have an open investigation. You know, they have an open investigation on you, and I know they're all over you, but an open investigation on me. So what does that mean for average American? He put up a Facebook post a little too spicy for the FBI, and now they've opened an investigation on him. Now what can they do?
Well, depending on the level of the investigation, if it's a preliminary or a full, in most cases this is going to be a full investigation, they're going to have all these tools at their disposal, and they're going to have a lot of pressure to use all the tools at their disposal because of the FBI's quota system. They have to say that they use these tools. They're a hammer in search of a nail. So if they were to open up an intelligence investigation, they could be looking through your mail. They could look through your social media that's publicly available, or they could lean on their partners in private industry who they like to liaison with and establish tripwires with to go through your private messages between you, your family, and your friends, as was what happened to my wife. My wife sent a private message on her Facebook account, and her account was immediately shut down. Why do you think that happened? So those are the sort of communications that can be monitored, and that could even extend into eventually obtaining a search warrant for your phone, a wire tap on any sort of texting or calling that you might do, or they might just come bang on your door at 6 o'clock in the morning like they like to do with the Bearcat and the tactical team and say that they have a search warrant for you now because you have done something that they deem to be improper, illegal. And finally, I'll say this. Once the process is begun, the process itself is the punishment because, as Donald Trump is finding out, once a process has begun, they can say you've obstructed that process, even if the underlying reason for that process to have begun is completely ridiculous. They can say, we're investigating you for wearing a red tie. Well, that's not illegal. Well, you're not cooperating with us. You've now obstructed our investigation, and we're going to arrest you for it.
Good grief. Okay, Steve, I'm gonna ask the lamest question in the world, and I know it's lame, but I want you to unlame all of us. Isn't there some protection the average citizen has from the federal law enforcement arm declaring war on people like this? Shouldn't there be something in place to stop it?
There should, under ideal circumstances. You have supposed to have equal, co-equal branches of government, so you have hopefully a House of Representatives that could stand in the gap and use the power of the purse strings to defund the woke and weaponized FBI and the DOJ, but they've proven unwilling to do that thus far. They're not willing to use the Holman rule where, in effect, they could zero out salaries or entire programs. They've just gone along with it and said that, you know, well, I guess America is going to have to vote next year and give us more power and authority, but they're not willing to use the power that they've already been given. I think, though, that we're looking, and myself included, I'm going to hold myself accountable. You can't look to Washington to solve this problem. You have to look to your local authorities. So I had the privilege to be involved with an effort in South Florida down in Naples where that county established itself as a sanctuary county for the Bill of Rights. And in effect, the county board of commissioners and the sheriff in that county are going to stand in the gap if the FBI or the federal government is out of control and comes forward with something that they feel is out of line with the Constitution, and the sheriff will stand in the gap to protect the citizens.
Okay, Steve, let's talk about you. I know you don't like to focus on that, but I know there's you, there's Garrett, there's Kyle, many more brave people who have come forward. How is the FBI handling these cases? How are they handling you?
Well, they're mishandling it, I think, for all of the FBI whistleblowers. And like you said, I don't like to focus on myself, but I'll talk about somebody else. There is currently a whistleblower who came forward to the Judiciary Committee, and their information was handed over to the Inspector General's office, which should, in effect, be doing oversight of the FBI. The Inspector General's office then, in turn, turned that information back over to the FBI. So now that person who was hoping to remain secret and anonymous, their identity is known to the FBI, and the FBI has now opened up a domestic terrorist investigation of this individual for their participation at President Trump's speech on January 6th. They attended the speech and left, did not go over to the Capitol, but the FBI deemed that to be questionable and wound up suspending the individual security clearance, as is what happened with all of the whistleblowers. In my case, my actual clearance was revoked the day that I testified in front of the Weaponization Select Committee. So clearly, all the guns have turned on the individuals who have come forward in good faith, hoping to reform the agency, because the agency is obviously happy with how things are going and wants to remove the problematic employees who are not willing to just follow orders.
Okay, so just to be clear, an FBI agent attended a speech given by his president at the time, then left, committed no unlawful acts that we're aware of, and now he's being investigated by the same FBI as a potential domestic terrorist. Do I have that right?
You do. You do. I have a good authority that several of us that are undergoing that. I always like to try to find the air marshal who's following me whenever I fly these days.
Yeah, okay. Good grief. Okay, Steve, how do we fix this? You were inside of it. I've never been inside the FBI. You were a special agent in the FBI, unless I'm mistaken. How do we fix this?
Well, I think first we have to change our mindset here. We have to get uncomfortable. We have to be comfortable being uncomfortable and think about things in a different way. This country existed before the FBI. It can certainly exist after the FBI. So if you installed me as a radical dictator, I would do away with it. But I think that you can take some large steps to reforming it. One, we have to defund the intelligence collection apparatus. Two, we have to defund and eliminate the quota system that is perversely incentivizing people to gin up stats and go after and target Americans. And lastly, we really need to think about disarming the FBI entirely, making an unarmed investigative agency that can assist the local sheriff's offices and police departments, because those are the guys who know the usual suspects. They know the problems that are in their communities. The FBI's prime directive should be to assist them. So let's think of it as empowering local law enforcement instead of defunding the police, as it will be labeled undoubtedly by the communist left in this country.
Steve, you are the man, my brother. I appreciate you more than you know. Come back soon, please.
I will. Thanks, Jesse.
All right. Meanwhile, the street communist scum, they're running rampant right now, having a grand old time. After all, it's about to be an election year. Let's talk to Julio Rosas about that in just a moment. Before we do that, let's do this really quick. Look, I don't give you a bunch of self-help stuff, do I? Because that's not who I am. But I will tell you this. This is just me personally. I have taken a male vitality stack from CHOP. Natural herbal supplements, not pills and crap like that. Natural herbal supplements. I've taken a male vitality stack from CHOP for over a year now. I feel like I'm in my 20s again. I am so full of energy all the time, even in the afternoons, you know, when we all go for that late cup of coffee, no more. I'm so focused and in a better mood. You know, testosterone, fellas, your mood, you're down a lot, depressed. Get your T levels checked. In fact, get your T levels up. Go get a male vitality stack from CHOP. Take it for 90 days. Ladies, you're not left out. There's a female vitality stack for you. No more big pharma filth. Natural herbal supplements. All right? Here's what you need to do. Go to CHOP.com. Promo code is JesseTV. That gets you a massive discount, 35% off everything. They have all kinds of stuff. CHOP.com, promo code JesseTV. We'll be back.
Hey there, I'm Mary Catherine Hamm.
And I'm Carol Markowitz. We've been in political media for a long time.
Long enough to know that it's gotten, well, a little insane.
That's why we started Normally, a podcast for people who are over the hysteria and just want clarity.
We talk about the issues that actually matter to the country without panic, without yelling, and with a healthy dose of humor.
We don't take ourselves too seriously, but we do take the truth seriously.
So if you're into common sense, sanity, and some occasional sass,
you're our kind of people.
Catch new episodes of Normally every Tuesday and Thursday
on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen.
You're president. It's a war criminal. You're president. Hey, guys, there. You're president. It's a war criminal. Stop the genocide. Break him out. Break the war criminal out. Break the war criminal out. Break the mother.
Man. Is it election season already? Because that's what I saw right there. Joining me now, my friend, United States Marine, author. He has a great Substack because he's a field reporter, maybe the best we have, called Mostly Peaceful, Julio Rosas. Julio, okay. You've been on the ground, surprise, surprise, at these protests. I can't believe that you have not had suffered serious bodily harm at this point in time, but what's with these people, Julio? Because I'm hearing these are a lot of the same people that were at the BLM and the Antifa protests. Man, they have a lot of causes.
Right. And what sets this apart from the past is that, you know, what sparked the BLM riots in 2020 was the one case with Derek Chauvin and George Floyd, right? But to the Palestinians and their allies, the stakes are a lot more higher than that, because to them, there's a whole nation and people that are about to be quote unquote genocided. And so that's why there's basically this giant mobilization from the far left is happening, because to them, the stakes are a lot higher than what they used to be. And then you couple that fact that, yes, it's now about to be election season. And really, I think one of the reasons why we haven't seen kind of the more kinetic action that we saw in 2020 is just because all this happened right as things started to get cold. within the country. So I think that kind of tampers some of the outrage. But I mean, we were outside the White House and things got slightly hectic. But it's just kind of interesting to see how everything is unfolding. And now, you know, instead of a Republican being in the White House, they I can tell you, they really hate Joe Biden because they view that he has betrayed them.
Julio, here's something I'm a little bit confused about, something you just said and something I heard a lot. They're worried about being genocided. Who thinks they're being genocided? And this is why I ask. Do they think Palestinians are going to be genocided? Hamas is going to be genocided? Muslims are going to be genocided? And I realize there's all kinds of crossover there, but Palestine itself is not a big place, only 2 million people. So how do we have this many Palestinians here, or is it about something bigger?
I think it's a combination of both. So, I mean, obviously it's a faulty premise. Israel is not genociding the Gaza Strip. We just saw a video today of civilians being allowed through Israeli lines to get out of the line of fire. And obviously there's all these other measures that the IDF has done to prevent, try to mitigate the civilian losses. But, you know, that aside, I think it's, again, the far left has been waiting for an issue to really galvanize them, to get them back out there, because once Derek Chauvin was found guilty on all accounts with George Floyd, that kind of rage dissipated. And that's why when there even has been cases of police misconduct or perceived police misconduct, there wasn't that same level of outrage. And then, of course, it wasn't election season either. So as I was saying before, it's just that there's so many crossover because they're talking about decolonization, which, you know, they want to do here in the United States and they want to do other places. They want to have reparations. I heard calls for reparations to be, you know, instead of sending money to Israel, we need to keep it here so that we can do reparations and invest in all this other stuff. So it really is kind of the grievances that that BLM has, but except it's on steroids, because again, there's a religious aspect to it too that just really gets people fired up. And then, of course, when you add an actual war into the context, people tend to really lose their minds over stuff like that. So, and I can tell you, just talking to the average person there, they want Israel to be completely destroyed. I mean, when you ask them, do you want a two-state solution? Oftentimes they'll say, no, we don't want a two-state. We want Palestine. And so the rhetoric is a lot more fiery in terms of, it's no longer just F the police. It's F this entire nation and group of people.
One thing I find interesting about this whole movement is how it's actually affecting and attacking Democrats as well. Here's Cory Booker and Senator Cucumber.
There are so many places in our country right now where people want to make sure that we have. This is what makes America great. The power to protest. The power to have free speech. The power of America.
4,000 plus dead children in Palestine. 9,000 plus dead civilians. Get off the stage. Get off the stage. I don't care.
The joke is on you. I had a stroke. I can't fully understand what you're saying.
Yeah, I think that's really funny. United States Senator admitting he can't comprehend sentences. Either way, Julio, this is creating a domestic political problem for Democrats in ways I don't think they anticipated.
No, not at all. And that's why when you look at places like Michigan, where you have a strong Muslim community, they have, and as in the clip that you played before with what I got outside the White House, They hate Joe Biden, and it really does affect the kind of how the outcome of the election, I think, is going to happen next year. And I understand why people have this initial reaction to say, well, why should I care what's in the Middle East? It's not our war. And that is true to a certain extent. But here's the thing. We have a lot of people in the United States that have a stake in it, whether it's one side or the other. And as we've seen here in the country, they might show up in your face whether you like to or not. I mean, just yesterday we had this case of an older Jewish man was punched in the face and he got knocked down and he died from that. And so this is really going to, I think, going to escalate a little bit more, especially once the election really heats up next year. And I think it remains to be seen kind of how Democrats are going to pivot to address that, because, again, when you look at kind of where these pockets of Palestinians or Arab, people of descent, they are typically in Democratic strongholds, and if they're not going to vote for Joe Biden, I think Democrats might want to, are going to pivot and say, okay, well, let's have a ceasefire, or, you know, let's see what we can do about funding for military aid. So I think you're right. They didn't anticipate it, and as usual, they're kind of slow to kind of react to, because this is grassroots. These are their most fervent supporters, and these are their loudest people that are going to try to really make sure that if they don't have it their way, that they're going to do something else to try to mitigate that.
Yeah, that's going to be a problem. Julio, my brother, I could spend all day with you. Thank you so much, man.
Thanks.
All right. Let's have some uncomfortable culture war talk. You want to do that? It's guaranteed to offend a bunch of people. Alex Clark is going to join us next. We'll talk to her about that. Before we talk to Alex, let's do this really quickly. The same people who are opening our border, attacking our food supply, you know, the people, they're attacking our money as well. You see this. Why do you think you walk in the grocery store now and start crying when you look at the cost of burger and eggs? There is a sustained focus attack on our monetary system. Our debt, look, you see the news. We talk about it every night. This is only going one direction. So what do you do? Because we can feel helpless. I can't stop it. You can't stop it. All you can do is prepare. You can't save the plane. Don't put that on yourself. Get yourself a parachute. When I tell you to get gold and silver, I don't tell you that because it's shiny and nice. I don't give a crap about it. I tell you to get gold and silver because it holds value no matter what. No matter what. And you don't have to take my word for that. History books tell you gold and silver hold value for, like, ever. Your dollar will go. The gold will not. Oxford Gold will send it to your front door. Gold coins or silver coins, whatever. I don't care what color it is. Get some. Get some in your 401k, IRA. Let Oxford handle all this for you. You don't know how to do it. I don't know how to do it. They do. Go to jessekellygold.com and protect yourself. Get yourself a parachute. jessekellygold.com. We'll be back.
Hey there, I'm Mary Catherine Hamm.
And I'm Carol Markowitz. We've been in political media for a long time.
Long enough to know that it's gotten, well, a little insane.
That's why we started Normally, a podcast for people who are over the hysteria and just want clarity.
We talk about the issues that actually matter to the country without panic, without yelling, and with a healthy dose of humor.
We don't take ourselves too seriously, but we do take the truth seriously.
So if you're into common sense, sanity, and some occasional sass,
you're our kind of people.
Catch new episodes of Normally every Tuesday and Thursday
on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen.
That's what you see women like Chelsea Handler, feminists like Chelsea Handler, going with now. They've been lied to by their society forever, yeah, that you could be a girl boss and you can do anything a man can do, which everyone who's ever seen a woman back up a vehicle knows that's not true. But either way, they've been told that they should do career and don't do a family or anything like that. And soon you're Chelsea Handler. Soon it's Valentine's Day and your womb resembles a dried up tumbleweed blowing down an old Western town. And your Valentine's Day date for the 10th year in a row is a 10-year-old copy of Magic Mike and a half full bottle of Xanax, and you're trying to pretend like you're happy. Boy, did they get mad at me about that one. It was just a friggin' joke. But, you know, there's some truth woven in there. Joining me now, Alex Clark, host of The Spillover with Alex Clark. Alex, you have a great video up titled, "Have We Girl Bossed Too Close to the Sun?" What are you talking about?
Yeah, so there's been several viral TikToks recently of girls complaining about working the 9-to-5 grind and how this isn't what they expected in life, that they're not happy, that they're really miserable. And then a lot of conservative commentators took that as an opportunity to roast her, basically, and just say, grow up, welcome to being an adult. in my take is that I posted on the Real Alex Clark YouTube is that this was actually never God's design for women. We're unhappy because spiritually, this isn't how we were supposed to be living, but also physically, this isn't how we were supposed to be living as women. So happening right now, and Charlie Kirk, I was actually just on the Charlie Kirk show, and we had a really nice heated debate on this. He doesn't believe me that this is happening, but my audience is primarily young women, and I am telling you that enthusiastically it is happening. There is a mass exodus of women leaving the feminist movement, even if unintentionally. So young women are not necessarily buying what the feminist movement has been selling, because there is ample evidence that what we were told was necessary to feel fulfilled. So examples would be poisonous hormonal birth control that wreaks havoc on your body, so that, you know, you can have promiscuous sex, which wreaks havoc then on your health, fighting a fake wage gap, which we know doesn't exist, putting more worth on working outside the home as opposed to working inside the home, telling women to ignore our guilt and shame from leaving our newborns at 6 weeks old, which is biologically unnatural and incredibly damaging for mom and baby, deferring to big fertility treatments and going into gobs of debt to maybe, not even guaranteed, get pregnant after putting your career first and putting off a family for your 20s and 30s. Basically, all of this has made us infertile, miserable, narcissistic, hormonally imbalanced wage slaves, and even young women who, yes, a lot of us, most of us, are still voting liberal, but they are at least experiencing the veil being lifted from their eyes in terms of what we've been told will allegedly make women happy. So I strongly believe that if we are able to convince women through culture, we get through to them on how going against God's design for the role of women in society and family should be. We get back to basics. Women will actually come around on the politics after that. So I'm not saying that women shouldn't work. Obviously, I work, but we should be doing two things, okay? We should be teaching and training young women to choose career paths, if they want one, that will be conducive to prioritizing the home. That means careers that allow you to have flexible hours, work part-time, or work from home. Nursing is a great example of that. If she wants to be a paralegal, she can do it, but do that stuff before you have a family and be willing to pause it or step away for a time, at least in the first 3 years of your child's life, when their development and attachment is crucial, and then come back to it when they're a little older. Now, according to the Mom Project, 43% of highly skilled women leave the workforce after becoming mothers. So what I have been saying, Jesse, is that if we teach girls that there is a high probability that they will want to stay home eventually, wouldn't that have some sort of impact on the type of career women might choose? Many of us have come to this point in our lives, or close to it, we're weighing the pros and cons and wondering which path to choose. Do I girl boss it up? Do I pursue career first? Or do I focus on a family? And Gen Z girls are feeling confused because millennials, my generation, propagandized this girl boss pipe dream and how great it would be. And Gen Z is now realizing as they're graduating from college that it sucks. So millennial conservatives, men and women, need to show grace to the younger generation, tell them that there is a better way and that it doesn't have to be like this, especially for women.
Okay, so I need you to help me out here because I'm neither young or a woman, and you're both. How do we reach them? Okay, they're not happy with where they are. That's not surprising. You just laid out the reasons very clearly, and I agree with you on all that. Now we need to reach them. I can't reach them, or if I can, I don't know how. How do we reach them? Where do we reach them?
So I am using, and a bunch of other commentators have been using, the culture talking points. So when you get through to them and you explain to them, like, hey, the wage gap is a myth. Our bodies, based on our menstrual cycle, the way God designed us, literally is not conducive to a 9-to-5 grind. And that, you know, big fertility uses you, manipulates you to put your career first so that they can make money on you later when you're bound to want to have a family like most women do. All of these things, the daycare lie, that it isn't actually normal, that it's not good to push through the guilt that you feel dropping your 6-week-old off at daycare. All of these things, if we use this to get through to women, they hear this, they understand it, the evidence is there, the facts are there, and then they're willing to listen to us on the other things and realize, oh, voting conservative actually is the best thing for me as a woman. And so I'm using those avenues to kind of get through to them first.
I want to play this ad from Planned Parenthood because I can't get an interview I did with an Abby Johnson. You probably know Abby Johnson, pro-life advocate. I can't get an interview with her out of my mind. I interviewed her and I asked her, why are so many women loving abortion? You know, have they just been lied to? And she said, she runs one of these pro-life centers, that so many women call her and they tell her they just, you know what, I don't even need to play the Planned Parenthood ad. She said so many women call her and they just, they want to keep their bodies good or they want to get drunk on spring break. These horribly selfish reasons to have an abortion, not as if there's a good one. How are we supposed to penetrate self, Alex? You see what I'm saying? If there's a young woman so consumed with herself that she wants to have an abortion so she can get plastered in Punta Cana, how in the world am I ever supposed to read someone like that?
Well, it's very difficult, but I think that the number one way to get through to them on that is you have to get them to realize that it is a human being. So if you're talking about the life of a human being that is in jeopardy, then how does that compare to your selfish desire and want to be able to party on spring break or go to Italy? Those are the things that you have to explain that. So like, okay, you want to do that, but we're talking about then ending the life of another person, then does that make that right? And once they cannot get around the fact that it is undeniably a human being, then I think you can have a conversation with them. But that's the first step.
Alex, what role does the church have, and what ways have they failed in this country, regardless of people's beliefs? This is something I've been hot on over and over again about this mealy-mouthed, pathetic church we have now in America that doesn't speak hard truths at all. Every single one of these skinny jeans pastors is up there, I don't want to offend everybody, and what it's done to women and the messaging in this country.
Okay, so this is really near and dear to my heart because I just dropped a brand new episode of The Spillover, my podcast, with Pastor Costi Hinn on this exact thing. So a role of a church in the culture war is for the people that are participating in the body of their church to hate sin while the world is continually pushing the envelope on what is acceptable and then glorifying sin. Throughout all the different centuries, you see this circular pattern where a society will start the rejection of the role of the family, and you have women not wanting to have the biblical worldview of submitting to their husband, for example, putting career above the home, the sexual revolution, rebranding casual sex as empowering. People forgo the natural function between man and woman with the homosexual revolution, which leads to the debasement of the mind. If you read Romans 1:28 through 32, you will see this pattern over and over again. The pastor's role in the culture is to address sin in an individual level in the corporate level, aka the congregation of the church, and guiding to what God's standard is, which is to live under the Bible and subject themselves to God as Lord. That will separate the church from the rest of the world in the culture and encourage them to go out and preach the truth, which is true love. So the question is, how do you know that your church is failing? How do you know whether your church is failing or winning at the culture war? What are the signs? Pragmatism, the thought that you have to change your church to make the world accept you and bring people in. Something Pastor Costi Hinn said in this episode of The Spillover, which is now viral, was that Sunday church should be conducted as if it was a family affair expecting guests, which means that we conduct as a family, and then we read the Bible as instructed, we worship as instructed, and we do not let the world affect how we do things. We don't worship BLM or the LGBTQ alphabet agenda. We worship the God that provided Jesus to live the perfect life since we cannot because we are sinners. Because of that, God the Father had his son Jesus die as a perfect sacrifice, just like the lamb in Passover, and with his blood or death, his righteousness substitutes our sin, so that we are covered by his sacrifice. And then historically proven, we know Jesus rose from the dead on the third day because he satisfied the Father's wrath to punish sin. And this is important. There is always a punishment for sin. So now for believers, it has been taken care of on the cross. So Jesus is interceding on our behalf to the Father in heaven because we are still sinning. Jesus advocates on our behalf to God the Father saying, this is my child. So our worship service shouldn't be designed to appease the world. The sermons at your church shouldn't either. They should clearly and obviously separate us from the world so that we can go into the world with the truth and share what I just shared, which is the true gospel. The goal of the church in America or anywhere isn't to utilize the means of the world to get new people in there. The goal is to present the truth to people so that they are saved. The pastor's role is to train and equip the body with biblical reasons and truth to fight the culture war out in the world with their loved ones, at their workplace, participating in their hobbies, at their kids' soccer games, etc. Those people, you and I, Jesse, we preach to the lost what the gospel is, and then hopefully those people who are now saved will start attending that church, and then the cycle restarts over and over, where you keep going out into the world and you share the truth. This is what the role of the church should be in the culture war. And this is what 95% of American churches are not doing.
Alex, come back soon. That was awesome.
Thank you so much.
All right. It is time to lighten the mood. Before we lighten the mood, let's talk about something. Something wild. I just saw some story. I think it was out of Sweden that some guy had a dog. He lived to the age of 30 or 31. It was crazy. And I started digging into it because I'm a nerd like this. And did you know that American dogs die way sooner than dogs in European countries, many European countries and other places? Now, why would that be? Are we worse here in America? No, obviously we're better. Our food, the food we give the dogs is worse. Our food is dead. You go to some European country, almost always they will feed their pets fresh food that still has nutrients in it. We give our dogs what? Dog food. It's all brown. Why is it brown? Because it's dead. They killed everything in it. You give your dog, I give my dog empty calories every meal. And then they die at 10 and we're despondent. Start giving your dog nutrition. Just pour rough greens on your dog's food. It's like giving them all those fresh ingredients. It's an all-natural nutritional supplement with everything they need, probiotics and vitamins and minerals. You will see such a difference with your dog who will live longer. Call them. Free Jumpstart trial bags, 833-33-MY-DOG, or go to roughgreens.com/Jesse. We'll be back.
Hey there, I'm Mary Catherine Hamm.
And I'm Carol Markowitz. We've been in political media for a long time.
Long enough to know that it's gotten, well, a little insane.
That's why we started Normally, a podcast for people who are over the hysteria and just want clarity.
We talk about the issues that actually matter to the country without panic, without yelling, and with a healthy dose of humor.
We don't take ourselves too seriously, but we do take the truth seriously.
So if you're into common sense, sanity, and some occasional sass,
you're our kind of people.
Catch new episodes of Normally every Tuesday and Thursday
on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen.
All right, it's time to lighten the mood. And I don't know about you, very few things lighten my mood, like people hurting themselves. Not too bad, right? Not too bad, but for instance, if you're trying to learn how to ride a bike, you know, a motorcycle, sometimes it doesn't go all that well. Here it is. I'll see tomorrow.
You want smart political talk without the meltdowns? We got you.
And I'm Carol Markowitz.
And I'm Mary Catherine Hamm. We've been around the block in media, and we're doing things differently.
Normally is about real conversations. Thoughtful, try to be funny, grounded, and no panic.
We'll keep you informed and entertained without ruining your day.
Join us every Tuesday and Thursday.
Normally, on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
This is an iHeart Podcast.